You know, I just realized how quickly we, you know, we turn our eyes on ourselves. And, you know, the reality is, even when, like Stephen's talking about sowing and reaping, you know, I know the most popular vein of speaking on sowing and reaping is focused on self. I sow, I reap. I sow, God blesses me. I sow, I get the increase. You know what? I honestly don't care about that. I reckon we need to get the idea of sowing and reaping a harvest for the kingdom of God, not just me. And that's the problem with so much of our, particularly, you know, our Western Christianity is it's like so self-focused. And that's why I love for this season, we can just get our eyes off us for a minute and get it on our communities, wherever you are, that's your immediate community, to see impact, to see effect, to see God's kingdom come, to see his will done. And you know, I was really moved in the readings this week because this theme just comes up multiple times as we're reading Numbers this past week on complaining and on grumbling and on whining. And you know, and you start to look back over the story of, you know, Israel, and it's no different. It's like this microcosm experience of humanity. Man, and how quickly we just, as humans, resort to grumbling, whining, complaining. You know, I heard the most amazing story this week, and was a lady who's part of our small group that meets on a Friday, and she was saying, you know, she was just talking about how this reading had impacted her this week. And, you know, she was talking about work, and her name's Susie, and I wanted her to come and share it, but she couldn't come. But she was just saying, you know, she's at work and she's just talking about, you know, how bad it is and the attitudes of people and how bad my work environment is. And man, she just found earlier this week, she's just getting into this like cycle of just griping and then agreeing with other people. Yeah, miserable. Yeah, I just can't stand it. Yeah, all right. She gets in her car and she happened to have Christian radio on, which there is one here on the coast. Anyway, she flips it on. There's a speaker there. And the speaker on the radio is speaking about grumbling and complaining and says this. Oh, and here's little Susie just grumbling and complaining about this and that. She said she could not even move her car. She literally turns it on. The radio comes on and this voice of a speaker goes, and here's little Susie just grumbling and complaining and whining. And she just felt like God goes, shut up. Man, she was sharing this Friday morning with just like tears in her eyes going, I don't reckon I've ever heard God speak clear to me. And he had a woman's voice. You know, it was like God just speaks. And the thing that I realize is that, you know, we get so quickly absorbed with ourselves. And when trial comes, or when discomfort comes, or when confusion comes, or when I don't even see a clear way, what do I resort to? Here we are talking about prayer. Prayer is just conversation with God, expecting to engage with him. It's not about ritual. It's not about just repetition. In fact, you know, Jesus goes, don't be like, you know, the Pharisees that just, you know, have ritual prayer. Forget the ritual prayer. Let's just get real with our hearts before God. That's what prayer is. And this whole thing is we have this default position of either I go to my knees or I go to my quiet place and I go, hey, God, I need to talk to you about something. Or we just go to self and we start getting all defensive and we start getting self-protecting and we start complaining. We start whining. We start criticizing. We start pointing out error and fault all around us to preserve ourselves. But all that is self-focused, selfishness, self-centeredness. And what we see, and I'm going through it quickly here, is an incredible history of it with Israel when they're pulled out of Egypt. Literally, you know, they've been crying out. In fact, the beginning of Exodus says God heard his people crying out about how bad their situation was. 400 years of slavery, families, children born into slavery, and it just keeps getting worse and worse with each pharaoh. And God raises up a deliverer, Moses. He goes and he says to Pharaoh, let him go. 10 plagues later, they walk out of there. And in that, they've seen God's hand of preservation over them in the Passover. So they walk out into the desert. The Egyptians follow them really quickly. Immediately, God just sets up this protective wall between them and their pursuers. And when there's no way out and they're stuck on this peninsula, I know it's a peninsula because I saw the movie, The Ten Commandments, but it's like they're stuck there and there's just water ahead of them. And God goes, I'll fix this too. Just says this wind blew all night and the waters open and they walk through on dry land and come out the other side. And when the Egyptians go, we'll just follow you. We'll come through the water and get you. God goes, no, you won't. And shuts it back in. And then they see all of that. God's provision, his protection, his answer to their heart cry. He delivers them. He protects them, walks them through the water, separates them fully from their enemies. And in Exodus 15, 3 days later, 3 days after seeing all that, they're whining. Now, I understand that being thirsty is uncomfortable. I've never gone 3 days without water, but they have 3 days without water. But all of a sudden, they're going to Moses. So what? You brought us out here to kill us? Well, hang on a minute. God spoke to your forefathers. He had an inheritance for you. And that he was going to be your deliverer. And he was going to call you out. They've seen it. They've seen all his protection. And instead of going, God, I thank you, you did this. God, I thank you, you did this. God, I've seen your faithfulness in this. I've seen your goodness in this. I've seen your power in this. I've seen your authority over our enemies, over oceans, over everything. Surely you're going to lead us to water. So God, we're depending on you. It doesn't happen. They go into default self-centered, self-protection mode and start griping, whining, complaining, and blaming. God, in his mercy, provides water. About 5 weeks later, in Exodus chapter 16, now they're hungry. Lauren Horton, who's often around here, she introduced me to a word a couple of years ago called hangry. And that is when you've been hungry long enough and your stomach's hurting that now you're just angry. And for some people, it happens in a very short time. Like for Lauren, I think it's hours. And she's not here to defend herself, but that's pretty true. And she just starts getting hangry and getting short and getting irritable. Well, these guys have gone a little while without food, and so what do? They cry out to God, oh God, I've seen your faithfulness. Just 5 weeks ago you provided. No, they don't. They don't thank God for his provision of water just 5 weeks ago, of all his protection, of the history. They start whining, complaining, griping, wanting to... Yeah, and they say this, they go as far as to say, it would have been better if we died in Egypt than come out here. That's just stupid. Honestly, that is where you have got to a point of the ridiculous. You've been crying out your whole heritage for 400 years to be delivered from bondage and slavery. You've seen God's protection. You've seen his deliverance. You've seen his provision. And because you're hungry, you go, yeah, we just would have been better to die back there. It's amazing what we can start to feed ourselves and deceive ourselves with and miss what God is doing and wants to do. In no time at all, Exodus 17, they're thirsty again, no water to drink, and they grumble against Moses, and they eventually want to kill Moses. And then you come to Numbers chapter 11. And by the way, here they are planning to kill Moses. It's Moses who went to Pharaoh, Moses who got him delivered, Moses who holds his staff out over the waters, Moses who leads him through, Moses who leads him in worship on the other side, Moses who gets him water, Moses who intervenes, gets him food, Moses, we're just going to kill him. It's like brilliant thinking, isn't it? Who's going to lead him? God has said, this is who I have leading. And they're going, we don't care. We're going to kill him because he didn't get us water again. That's how bad grumbling and complaining and blaming gets. And the question is, what's our default position? What's your default position when things aren't good? Do you go to God in humility and recognize his faithfulness, his power, his authority, or do we start questioning him, accusing him, blaming him, or questioning, accusing, and blaming other people? You start to go through this further. In Numbers chapter 11, it says, the rabble who were with them. Now, these are people from Egypt that went out with them. It says they began to crave all the food that they used to have in Egypt. And they started talking to the other Israelites and going, you remember the food back there? Remember how much better it was? Forget this stuff that God's putting on the ground every single day since we've cried out to him and provided for us day in, day out. We don't like it anymore. They had celebrated it at one point. Now they hate it. But it's the ones on the outside that are these discontented people, and they start whispering and it starts to flow through. And God provides meat, but he goes, man, it's going to rot in your teeth. And then he judges. Now, it's interesting. He judges the outskirts of the camp. It says fire came and consumed the outskirts of the camp. And I believe that is because that's where these insidiously grumbling people are, that they're out there going, yeah, you know, you see Moses in the middle, you see him with the tent of meeting, you see that. How much better would we be if we didn't have him? And it just is that murmuring and complaining around the fringes. And most murmurers and complainers don't even have the courage to walk up and talk to anyone who can do anything about it. And they don't go in humility. They go in pride and they go in accusation. God so often says, humble yourself. You know what? It gets worse. Because Aaron and Miriam, his brother and sister, eventually go to him. And you know why they don't like him? Because of his wife. And so they start grumbling about Moses because they don't like his Cushite wife. And then they decide, you know what, we can do as good a job as Moses. In fact, he's our little brother. Aaron and Miriam are the older two. You know, it's interesting to me. I've personally experienced this one, not all too recently. Someone comes and says, oh man, you know, there's people who are a little unsettled. Yeah, why? Your wife. You want to get me going, say something about my wife. People just get opinions. They just get all snooty about stuff. And so I asked, have you ever talked to my wife? Oh, no. Wow, do you know my wife? No, I can just tell. Really. You know, I hoped parts of me had died off, but stuff like that wakes up the old Tim. Yeah, I'm just, you know, I had someone a few back that came after my wife because of the way she worshipped. My wife often just held her arms open and just worshipped. And I had a lady who was part of our church go, man, she is so immodest. She just wants to show off her body. I was just like, you want to go there? Really? You want to go there? Because I wouldn't hit ladies, but it makes me want to find a lady who would hit a lady, but I didn't. I didn't go there. I'm like, you serious? You want to go that way? I feel like you just want to go. Don't. Just shut it now. Don't say anything else. Because we stand at a distance. We just judge. We just opinionate. We just begin to murmur, grumble, complain, and then we'll find someone else who doesn't like it either. Oh, yeah. You too, huh? We should hang out more often. And the truth is, once you've got a grumbler and a complainer, not long, and they'll find a problem with you too, and then they'll grumble about you. I thought you were my friend. It's just this garbage thing that we do. And Israel goes on, and then and God just goes, mate, I'm not changing my mind on who I called to lead. Moses, I called him. You grumble against him, you're going to pay the penalty. And Miriam, man, she ends up just leprous, and God's basically going, I'll show everyone the state of your heart on the outside of your body. You are rotting away on the inside, and God basically goes, wear it on the outside for a while. And we so often hide away behind all this. And then it goes on, mate, you think they're going to learn, but they don't. You come to Numbers 16, and now they decide, we're going to go to Moses with the professional grumblers. They gather 250 of the council leaders to go and complain together. Maybe there's authority in numbers. Korah, Dathan, Abiram, man, they come and they go, we don't want you leading anymore. It's kind of like God goes, well, if you don't want to be under Moses' leadership, then you're going to have to die. And he takes care of that. Consumes all of them. But you know what? They've started this thing in their tribes, in their homes, in their families, in their communities that are a part of Israel. And the next day, the people have not learned. And this plague of bitterness and gossip has moved through the people. And all of a sudden, there is a literal plague that God goes, I am going to judge this community for their mouths, for their tongues. And it's not just against Moses. God goes, it's against me. And when it's against me, you're going to face me. God goes, like, forget the middleman Moses. He just happens to be my instrument. You want to talk about this? Then you're talking about me, and I'm going to deal with it. And God deals with it at a God level. And the next day, 14,500 people. God just starts moving through. And it's not till intervention and someone prays and goes, stop, God, please relent, or you'll destroy us all. But the problem is that that's our base nature. And I'm going to move quickly because it's not just Old Testament, it's New Testament. It's in Matthew, people whining about the way that God, you know, has this common measure of grace and common measure of mercy that he gives. It's in the parable of the farmer and the people he employs. Offers them full day wage at the beginning of the day, full day wage, 10 o'clock, full day wage for a midday start, full day wage for a 2 o'clock start, full day wage for a 4 o'clock start. And at 5 o'clock, he pays them all a full day wage. And in no time, they're all like, that's not fair. And the farmer goes, didn't I tell you I was going to pay you a day's wage? What have I done? There was no grounds, but they're going, well, we have a right for our gripe. We don't see you as fair. We don't see you as just. We don't like the way you've ruled. We have a right. And the thing is, we find a right to pin our griping on. It could be a wound. It could be an offense. It may legitimately be something that someone did to you, but you internalize it and become bitter rather than going, this is an opportunity for me to forgive and be set free from it. And then we don't have to live with this bitterness and this griping. Even people that will, you know, you'll have as bosses and as leaders and even pastors and whoever, they're never going to be perfect. Moses was not perfect, but he was called. I'll skip the rest of the things I had. The thing that I just want to say at the end, it's so natural to grumble. But rather than turning to God and looking at his faithfulness and his goodness and trusting his character, they grumble first option, second option, last option. God is gracious, he's patient, he's loving. But there's also a point that he's had enough. The biggest thing that we got to realize is our grumbling and complaining can easily become toxic. We want someone to hear it. We want someone to wear it with us. And you know what we need to learn to do is just go to people, shh, stop. It'll accomplish nothing. Shh. Joe, it would change so much. Just stop. No. And I challenge you, I challenge myself. Are we going to be an instrument that goes, stop? There's some beautiful ways to overcome grumbling. You know what? Something that is so important to get. We get our eyes off ourselves when we get our eyes on others in a positive way. You know, last Wednesday night we had that evening and we talked a little bit about it, about the opportunity to serve. You know, you want to quit grumbling, then get involved in other people's lives who are in a different situation than you. Find a way to serve them. Philippians 2, Jesus came and he took on the nature of a servant. He humbled himself. And Wednesday night, we had this. We invited people from the community. I invited a couple of them back tonight. I was going to have them share, but we've gone way over time. Yeah, the guys from Fusion. Jesse, I saw you around here somewhere. Where are you? Jesse O'Neill back here. Just stand up one sec so people can see your face. Fusion is on our local high school campuses, and there is opportunity to engage with these guys and just serve young people, so many of them from broken situations that just need someone to befriend them and love them. And often we're like, I don't know if I have time. Get out of that mindset and serve someone. The guys from Christian Surfers, I asked them to come because, you know, so often what they're doing is they're just going and serving. One of the beautiful things Board Riders does, because it's a passion of my heart, is they serve, they just cook the barbecue up at the DSA, Disabled Surfing Association events up and down the coast here. That's been something that's been very dear to me for years. But, you know what, they're families that cope with disability all the time, major disability. You just go and as they're having, you know, they're being taken out surfing, just cook a barbecue and love and serve. You know, one of the most amazing things I've seen there is this little boy who is what's called a non-verbal disability. He's got pretty major physical disabilities, but he is what has been referred to as completely non-communicative, completely non-verbal. And I remember we took this little fella out and he just lies there and you have to, because he's got this tissue paper type skin as well, so we have to put things under his head to protect him so he doesn't, you know, rub his skin off his face, and you've got to be really gentle with him. But I remember the first time we rode with this little fella, he's just lying head on his side on the board just humming. Quietest little... And every time we'd ride on this way, this little guy just had this little hum. And at the end, I went to the mum and me and the other guy who's the team leader with me, and we went, you said that he's completely non-verbal, non-communicative, but it's funny, when we ride, he hums. And, you know, we're just sort of going, that's so cool. And she's like, he doesn't. No, he does. You need to come out with us. And she came out with us and just ran alongside us. We began, and she, for the first time ever, she heard her little guy just making a little noise. You know, she stood there and wept. Transformational, but it would never have happened if there weren't people who were willing to serve for a moment. And this is the thing, we get so self-focused. And I love these guys go out and they serve, you know, the Marucci guys right now serving the North Shore Board Riders and just offering to build relationship. You want to quit griping? Get in a place of serving. Kaylin comes here week after week and sets up chairs and sets up tea and coffee with a small team, and then it all gets torn down. And I love that the... Biblical studies guys from YWAM have pitched in, but man, there are ways, instead of just coming and sitting and then consuming and talking and smiling and leaving, you could pitch in and serve someone. It's true. You want to get your eyes off yourself? Come and pray. People look at it and go, man, wow, an hour and a half in the morning, 2 hours at night. If that's our first reaction, it's kind of, yeah, where our hearts are at. Even if you can come 10 minutes, get up before work, come 10 minutes early, drive through, come and just pray. Make that deliberate decision because it will change the way we look at things. Get our eyes off here and get them on God. That's the moment. Even if you come and you're just thankful to God, not praying for stuff, go, God, I'm so thankful. Look back at your life journey like Israel should have done. You've been faithful, you've been good, you've protected, you've delivered, you've provided. God, I'm thanking you. I'm so grateful again and again and again and again and again. Mate, I tell you what, you could fill up an easy hour and a half or 2 hours just going back over your life and going, God, thank you. Never having to ask him for anything, just praising him. God, thank you. And seriously, I just want to encourage you, and you want to change the attitude from grumbling and complaining, start being thankful. Truly, start being thankful in everyday situations. See, I did this seminar with Tony Powell. It was just awesome. It was just on learning gratitude. And that's all I'm going to say. That those seminars are coming up all the time. We've sort of taken on being a place where she can do those fairly regularly. And so we just sort of said, Tony, if you want to do them here, come and do them. Come and teach people just how to be grateful. One of the key scriptures is whatever is good, whatever is true, whatever is pure, whatever is of good report, whatever is noble. Think on these things. Get our minds on that stuff. And so, Father, as we close tonight, I know it's been full and there's a lot of stuff we're talking about, but God, you want to draw our hearts to you. God, I'm so convinced of that, and I pray that we'd be a people that are quick to take opportunity to serve. God, we're people who are quick to be grateful to you, to praise you, to honor you. God, and then when we're in a right place with you, to bring our requests before you. God, not just to bring our complaints. And Father, I thank you for this week that we have ahead of us. I thank you for Roy and the team that have come down from Bundaberg. And God, I just thank you for their passion to engage you. And Lord, I just pray that our lives would be stirred, that we'd be touched, that we'd be encouraged and moved. But Lord, I just pray that we'd get a glimpse of your kingdom. Lord, let your kingdom come. Let your will be done here in our midst and through us, God, in this region, God, in this nation, and God, in this earth. And Father, would you, I'm just stirred again, even thinking of what Stephen was saying. God, would you forgive us where we turn your principles into our advantages? God, please, where we're, I know you're a God who blesses and you provide, but Father, I just feel sick when we so often try to manipulate your hand for our own benefit rather than the furtherance of your kingdom. And so, Lord, I just pray that you would continue to shape us. I thank you for those who continue to come here week after week and earnestly pursue you. And Lord, I pray that you would reward their diligence with a very real knowledge of you and of your heart. Shape them. God, we want you. And I thank you that you are faithful. And God, now I pray that tonight you would lead us from this place in peace. God, with our eyes fixed upon you. And Lord, I pray that we would know your face turned toward us. God, your countenance lifted upon us, your grace extended to us. May we walk in your wisdom. May we walk in your grace. But may we walk in your peace and hope. In Jesus' name, amen.